my name is Christy Keeler, and I'm a visiting assistant professor at the University of Nevada, Las Vegas. I teach a computer methods course, and I also teach three elementary social studies methods courses. And I am very excited to present to you today on the topic of Beyond PowerPoint, Integrating Technology into Social Studies Methods Courses. The overview of this presentation is first to begin with a discussion of why we need to integrate technology into education and particularly into social studies methods courses. Next, to look at methods of integration, and I'm separating that into two separate sections. First is productivity, which I think of as all of the things that the teacher does when the students aren't around. So all of the administrative type tasks that we do as educators, and most of that is just information that examples that I model for my students rather than things that they actually use. And then the instruction, how I integrate technology into the lessons that I teach so students see it modeled and also get experience using those technologies. Following that, we will, I'll give a brief closing, and if time is permitting, there will be room for discussion. So let's begin with technology integration. There is definitely a call for integration. The NCSS standards, of course, has a theme that relates to technology, but also in the back of the standards text, it talks about the importance of powerful social studies teaching, and part of that says that it is important that to be a powerful social studies educator, you need to have an integrative approach, and that integrative approach must include a technology basis. So this is not something that's new to our field. We know that this is important. And we also know that it's important not just because it's in the standards, but also because it's just in the fabric of our lives today. A good example is in the popular literature with Thomas Friedman's recent popular book, The World is Flat, where he argues the importance of integrating technology throughout. In other educational forums, though, there is one huge leader in terms of recommending use of technology throughout all of the different major subject areas. And that is the International Society for Technology Education. And that international society has created a list or a compendium of standards called the National Educational Technology Standards, and there are three different sets of standards. There's the NETS, N-E-T-S, for students, and the NETS for students is intended for teachers to know what students should be doing in their classes, so the instructional piece of classwork or what happens in classrooms. And then there's the NETS T, which is what teachers need to be doing, and that primarily is the productivity but also your preparation for instruction. And then there's the NETS A, which is for administrators, and we won't be addressing that today because that doesn't deal particularly specifically with teacher education programs. That's more educational administration issues. The NETS S and the NETS T basically say two things, and that is that students need to learn how to use technologies, and they need to know how to use them in a fashion that it becomes ubiquitous. It's not necessarily the job of the classroom teacher, especially the social studies classroom teacher, to be teaching a student how to use technologies. But if in everything that we do, we're integrating those technologies, students will become intimately familiar with them just through the practice of using them. So yes, there's definitely a place for having the computer class, but if the computer class is the only place that they're getting in, then we are not meeting our national standards put forth by ISTE. And what's unique about the ISTE NETS is that unlike the other subject areas, it is not specific to one subject area. It's an umbrella set of standards where we are supposed to be integrating those NETS throughout every one of our social study or subject areas. So social studies, math, science, English, art, humanities, in all of the different areas. Next is the 21st century skills, which many of you have heard about. The 21st century skills are the more the updated or modern example of the SCANS report that came out in the late 80s, I believe, or early 90s. And what the 21st century skills says is that students need to know how to live in a 21st century world. If we're asking them to do things that are still using tools of the 20th century, then are we really preparing them to be citizens of the next generation, which is what we should be doing. And this is particularly true in the social studies, where we want to be preparing students for a world that we don't necessarily know what it's going to look like in the future. And social studies is the place to do that. It's not something that can really fit into a math curriculum, and maybe not as easily into language arts, but it definitely fits into social studies education. The 21st century skills were developed by a set of business leaders and educators who went and said, well, what is really important in education? And when the SCANS report came out, there was some of the ways that it was presented to teachers was that the content really isn't all that important. And yet in the 21st century skills, content is one of the major points that is addressed. We do need to learn content. We need to understand history. We need to understand geography, economics, and civics. And that's very clear in the 21st century skills. But also, we need to have an understanding of different learning tools and different learning skills. So we need to be able to integrate technologies. We need to be able to find information. We need to be able to ferret out what information is of high quality and what information maybe can be left behind. We also need to, in this new environment, be able to communicate and think outside the box. We need to be able to use tools to communicate, and we need to not think of ourselves in isolation as a nation, but we also need to have global connections, a global view, and looking toward collaboration in all aspects of our work, everything from outsourcing and insourcing to issues of global communication. So together, the NCSS standards, the ISTE NETS at the teacher and the student level, and the 21st century skills, I believe are very strong indicators of the importance and the need for us to integrate technology. But of course, common sense is the main reason. How many of us go through our days and we couldn't even exist in modern society without our modern technologies. We go to the ATM, our cars, some of us even use electric cars. So everything in our life has this ubiquity to it. We use our cell phones, and yet how often do we use cell phones in the classroom for instructional purposes? How do we teach students to use those? How do we deal with economics issues that relate to electronic funds? The problem with all this, though, is that to get a teacher ready to integrate this technology is a huge task. And what we tend to do right now is say, all right, teachers, you're out there, you need to start integrating technologies. And this is a very daunting task for an in-service teacher. In-service teachers are incredibly overwhelmed right now with issues of standards that they're having to do so much testing. They've got lots of students, and teachers wear so many hats. They might be the only adult person in a child's life that really cares about them, that notices that they're wearing the same clothes today, or that their hair wasn't combed, or maybe that they look a little sad. The children that walk through our doors today are in such great need in so many of our environments, and teachers are doing everything that they can to stay afloat and to plan their lessons. To go and learn new things is very difficult, and I am so grateful because teachers do that anyway. They're committed to growing and learning and becoming the best teachers that they can be. But we have to recognize that there's a limit to what they can do, and we don't want to burn out those teachers who are already doing a great job in service. So yes, we need to in-service our teachers, but we also need to recognize that technology integration doesn't start once you're a teacher. It should start beforehand. There are other reasons why it needs to start beforehand, and that's one is that if we as teacher educators are modeling technology integration, then it would be a natural segue from student in higher education to becoming a teacher to be using that technology. Also, we know that teachers tend to teach the way that they were taught. So if we are teaching in higher education in a way that our student teachers can say, hey, I could use this in my future classroom, then we're pushing that envelope a little bit farther to the possibility of them utilizing technology effectively in their future classrooms. Also, one huge, huge factor that I think has been ignored in teacher education programs is, depending on the institution in which you teach, many of the students with whom we're dealing are digital natives. Mark Prinsky says there are digital immigrants and digital natives. Digital natives are those people who have grown up with technology. You're maybe 20-somethings and below who feel or who have always known the internet. They didn't know a time when there weren't cell phones. They didn't know a time when there weren't handhelds. They didn't know a time when you couldn't just go online to find out what movie was playing or check their TiVo to find out, you know, to see ideas of what movies are playing tonight at the local theater or to get pay-per-view TV. They didn't understand a time when that didn't exist. Those of us who are a little older than that, however, we do understand or remember those times when they don't exist. And we are digital immigrants. We're having to learn how to use all of these things. What is a TiVo and when would you use it and why? What is the benefit of using a handheld? If I already know how to use a calendar really well, why do I really need that? Or I have my address book. So we are coming into this with a different perspective. And it's harder for us to learn the technologies because we're having to change our perspective. Whereas the digital natives aren't having to change their perspective. It's just, it's expected. It's what they do already. And we're also learning through educational technology research and through some of the EdSci research that it's possible that digital immigrants actually have a different intelligence, if we put it in Howard Gardner's perspective, where they think differently. They think in digital terms, whereas those of us who are digital immigrants do not think that way. We don't think in electronic formats. And so there are so many benefits to teaching our students who are primarily digital natives to use technology. For them, it's not a stretch. Now, for those of us who are at institutions where we have huge populations of non-traditional students, it is difficult for those students to learn to be confident using the technologies. One benefit I found, though, at UNLV is my students who are older are very eager to learn. They're willing to put in the time. They know that that they are at a disadvantage because many of their counterparts are younger and still have the experience of having just been in school, maybe a little bit more energy. They don't have children at home, and they're digital natives. And so as a result, those older students are very willing and eager to step up and take the extra time to learn the technologies that they need to learn. Recognizing that, though, it's incredibly important to me in my classes that I assist those students so that they can feel comfortable, and I give them the just-in-time training that they need to utilize the technologies. So given that as our basis for why we need to integrate technology into the social studies methods course, I'm going to start giving you examples of how I integrate it. And I'm going to start off with issues of productivity. So what are some of the things that I model in my class or that I use in my class so students can just see what teachers do with technology? And one thing that you all do already, but you need to make it more, or we all need to make it more explicit that we do it, is we're using gradebooks. And in the K-5 situation, the gradebook may not be as essential, but once you get into the middle level for your elementary methods or for your high school level, it's critical that you talk to your students about how do you design an electronic gradebook? Why do you use it? How can you make an electronic gradebook accessible to parents as well as students? So making sure that you are using an electronic gradebook so they get that to see that modeled. Another thing that I do that is, I think it's a really innovative use, I'm really excited to do it, is I take attendance in my classes and I use my handheld computer to take attendance. What I've done is I've downloaded from the university server all of my student information and I placed that into an Excel spreadsheet and then I added the dates that our class meets. If you have a handheld, what you probably have that came with it is a disk that is for Documents to Go. Documents to Go is basically Microsoft Office. So you have your PowerPoint, you have Word, you have Excel. And so I've downloaded all this information into Excel, and then I sync that with my handheld computer. So when I go into class, I just have my cell phone slash Excel spreadsheet or handheld, and I take my attendance right there, and they're used to seeing me take attendance using that. And then later through the class, I don't talk to them about using it for attendance. They've just come to see that as part of the class. I do talk to them about how teachers in Clark County School District, in the valley in which Las Vegas is seated, where most of UNLV students will go to teach, is currently using handhelds for assessment purposes, and that teachers need to feel comfortable using that technology. And so they're starting to see it in my classroom, so that when they're given a handheld as a teacher and told, you need to do your IDMS testing this way, then that's not something that's completely foreign to them. It's not, they've seen these, they know that it's okay, and the teachers use them. The other thing that most of us probably do is use technology for communication purposes. And we all use email, and probably all of you use the phone, and many of you use your cell phones. Some of you may or may not use blogs in your courses, or an older technology, the threaded discussion forum. If your institution is using a learning management system like Blackboard or WebCampus or UCompass, then that is a great place. Usually they're set up to create blogs or journal spaces or threaded discussions. And just make a place in your course where students can go and communicate. And I set up 3 blogs in WebCampus for my students at the beginning of the year. One of them is assignment questions and assignment comments. So if they have a question or a comment or an issue or a problem, they can just go in there and post their issue. What I tell my students is I follow that blog, but it's really their blog. And what I expect is if a student sees that another student has a need or a question, they are all responsible for answering that. And when I go in and I see that the question has not been adequately answered or not answered in a timely fashion, then I will answer it. But I expect them to be colleagues and assist each other first. I want them to start to see the collegiality that professional educators need to have to be able to be strong in their classrooms. I also create another threaded discussion or another blog space at the beginning of the semester that's for introductions. And some students use that and some students don't, but it's an opportunity for them to start using the technology before the first day of class, and it starts to help them to feel comfortable and starts to build community. And that's, of course, important to a social studies classroom. The other way that I use it is by having a section for personal issues. So it can be things like I'm selling a piano, or I have a car for sale, or I need a roommate, anything like that, or I know that there's this great event going on, would you like to come? And so they do use that one sometimes, but not as often. I mentioned that I give my students my cell phone number, and I also mentioned that I download the information from our university server with my students' personal information. What I can do, I use a Macintosh, and my address book will allow me to download all of that data from the university server into my address book. Then on the first day of class, I have students come in and they use that address book as a database. Each student I either pass around my handheld or my laptop computer, or I have my students come up to the front desk, and I have each of them look at the information that I have for them and make sure that it's all correct, make any changes. I ask them to add in additional phone numbers, because often I'll have their parents' telephone number or a home number, and I don't have a cell number, but they usually will call me on their cell. And if they have additional email addresses, I want to know what those are. And then I also, on my laptop, which is a MacBook Pro, it has a little camera in it, a video camera. And so I teach the first student, how to use that video camera and make the editorial changes. And that he or she takes a picture of him or herself. then that person is responsible to teach the next student how to do it, and so on until everybody in the class has gone through and updated their information and taken a picture of themselves. What this does is, at the beginning of the class, I deal with between 60 and 100 students per semester. It helps me to get to know their names. It teaches them about how to use the technology. It teaches them about how you can effectively use it and how you can let your students use it. And then I can sync that information with my cell phone. And then when somebody calls me, I use a Trio 650. When a student calls me, I can see a picture of that student. So if it's at the beginning of the semester when I don't know their names yet, I see their name and a picture and I know exactly who I'm talking to right away. So that helps me a lot as well. We also talk after the students put that in about how you can utilize this technology for your students. So, for example, a kindergarten classroom, they might be talking about how you behave nicely, maybe do a little role play simulation about how you might deal with a conflict out on the playground, and the students can do a little play, and they can do that in front of this camera. When they do it in front of the camera, that can be flashed up onto the big screen using an LCD projector or just a projector, and away you go. So they already know how to use a new strategy for in the classroom. The next issue in terms of productivity is web-based resources. And this is really the main part of my course, what I really want to share with you most today. Everything in my course is available online. My students know my address, which is coe.nevada.edu/ckeeler. And for my social studies methods class, it's /SSM for social studies methods. And everything is there. And you'll even, you know, students will say, well, where do I find that? And another student will turn to them and say, it's on the website. What they'll find on there is for every, there are two main pieces. There's the homepage, and that just pretty much gives pictures of kinds of things that we do and activity. It's an overview of the course. But the main hub is what I call the outline page. And on the outline page, it shows you exactly what we're doing every day, what's due, what's being assigned, what your required readings are. It allows you to access those readings. It also allows you to access the lesson plan for that day. If you go to the lesson plan for each session, you'll find linked from there all of the necessary materials to teach that lesson. So it includes there the lecture slides. I also, this semester, have added in lecture audios. So if you miss class, you can actually go in and listen to the audio that I took during class. They're unedited, so they're probably pretty boring, but they're still in there so my students can get access to them. And all the other related materials. So if you have to do makeup work, I just say, just go to today's lesson plan, look at the bottom, it'll show you what your absence requirements are, and you'll be able to get to all the materials that you need right from there. That's also a benefit to you as other teacher educators, because if you would like to utilize any of those, all of that information, like textbook forms, are all available online. I also give my students access to a lot of supporting videos that I've created for a different class. This is great for just-in-time training. So if students don't know how to create a PowerPoint presentation, then I will say, these are where you can go to get those videos, and you can create your slideshows after you watch the videos. The videos are between probably 5 and 20 minutes long, and they're set up just like what you would find maybe in Atomic Learning or what you might find on lynda.com. The difference is they're free and they're intended for educators in just-in-time training. I also include announcements on there. It's important for me that my students are not just seeing themselves as social studies teachers. I want them to see themselves as professional educators. And that to me means that they're extremely active in professional development and at a service level as well as at a participation level. So I announce things like Phi Delta Kappa meetings and Social Studies Council meetings, and when there's a Civil War reenactment or if there's a Chautauqua presentation in town, I put that on there so that students will be able to participate in those events. And I also include lots of links. Whenever a speaker comes in and says, oh, here's a good link, you see all your students writing it down, and you know that they're going to lose those. And so I have a page on my website that is pretty much just links, and it's links to all of our resources and forums, and also links to other great websites. And I'll tell you about other links that we have to social studies websites in a few minutes. So those are pretty much the issues of productivity. What do I do for my students? The next piece, though, is instruction. And that is, what do my students do, or what do we do in class, what experiences do they get so that they can be effective teachers, effective technology integrators in their social studies classrooms. And I'm going to separate this into two sections. One, the first one is independent work. And we all give out assignments, and so I'm calling this independent work. And so these are things that my students do on their own. I hold them responsible for them, they're graded for them, but we don't deal with them in class. And then the second section is lesson examples. What do we actually do in class where I teach them about technology use? So I'm going to start off with independent work and reading, that I know that we all require our students to read. And some of you hold your students accountable for those readings. What I do in my 200-level computer course is I give little quizzes, but we all know that quizzing is probably not the most effective way to determine if a student actually read for so many reasons. But the most important reason is I don't want to know that they read it. I want to know that they've actually integrated that they've internalized the material that they read. And so what I want them to do is I actually want them to tell me what they read in their own words. Also, what this allows me to do is to make sure that they can read effectively, so I can check and make sure that they are reading it for understanding, and they can write effectively. I would be so embarrassed if I had teachers leaving my classroom, going into student teaching or going into their own classrooms the following year, sending home letters to parents that had errors in them. There is absolutely no reason in the 21st century why anyone should send out a document that has any grammatical or spelling errors in it because of the ability to use the grammar and spelling checkers. So I hold my students accountable for the grammar and the spelling, but also for professional delivery. By having them write up synopses of their reading, and those tend to be between 1 and 4 or 5 paragraphs. Some of my students become very prolific when they write these, though they're not expected to do so. What this does is it allows them to get in that kind of fact delivery method of delivering information in writing, which really, as a teacher, you're more focused on. You're not focused on writing a paper that tells general information about something pontificates. You're interested in communicating a topic so that somebody can understand it. And that is really what these synopses do. I require that my students write, you know, about a paragraph overview, but the samples that I give them are usually much more detailed with students who have done exemplary work. And so what I find is that some students will write lots and lots. In the beginning of the semester, some of them think that they need to write an essay for each of these, and then I communicate back to them and say, I do not want an essay for each of these, I just want a synopsis. And what that helps them do is start thinking in terms of that writing for reporting, writing for detailed communication purposes, teaching them to write as a teacher. The way that I deliver the readings is that all of the readings are either in a book that is required, and I require 4 books. I require the NCSS Standards book, and we read that cover to cover with the exception of the high school examples, because my students are all in the elementary track. We also read the ABCs of Evaluation by Sandra Shore, which is no longer in print, but I do have my students buy a print copy of it that's been copied. We have royalty rights to use that for the course, but it's also available online, linked from our website. And then they read two fictional stories. One is Flat Stanley, and the other one is Patty Reed's Doll by Rachel Beauregard, and that's the story of a westward migration, and particularly the issue of the Donner Party, which for Nevada is a really hot topic, and so it's an exciting story for them to read. They also, however, have lots of other readings, and those other readings are all available online, linked from the website. There are chapters that they read, there are articles that they read, and they know when they want to do their reading, it's either in one of those four books or they have to go online to find it. So they start to get familiar with going online to access resources and starting to know that there are places online where you can go to find things on a consistent basis. Another issue is the delivery medium. The majority of what they read are either in books or texts that they find online, but there are two other ways that I deliver content to them. One is at the end of the semester, they need to listen to two different podcasts, and I make them easy for them to listen to because it's just the audio. I've received permission from the authors to put the audio directly on my website, so they can just access that audio directly and listen to it. That's kind of hard for some of them because they're used to skimming reading as they read, and you actually have to listen from the beginning to the end. Some of them don't have portable MP3 players or like an iPod, and so they actually have to listen sitting at a computer, which might take them a little bit of time, and each of them are about 20 to 40 minutes, so it takes them an hour to listen to those. But it starts to introduce them to the idea of podcasting and what valuable information you can listen to in podcasts. The two that I have them listen to, one is an episode from Speaking of History by Eric Langhorst, and that is when I'm teaching them about issues of professionalism and communicating with parents. In that podcast, he talks about the $100 laptop, so some ideas of integrating technology. He also talks about conferences that are available and going out and being educated himself. And then he talks about how he communicates with parents using websites and using study casts. And so it's really exciting for them to see how you can integrate technology. The other one that they listen to is from Soft Reset by Tony Curtis and Tony Denson and Mike Curtis, sorry. And those two talk about using handhelds in the classroom. That specific episode is on economics simulations. So it talks about free downloadable games that you can use to teach economics in your classroom. And I like it because we don't talk about economics a lot throughout the methods course. So this is one place where they can see that. They also learn the importance about the ability to use handhelds in the classroom. The podcasters talk about how they use it with elementary students. And then they also can see that there's free software available out there for people to use. Another mechanism that I use is for the texts that I require them to read, the novels, I have made audio recordings of those available to my students. Those audio recordings are in a protected site, so only they can get access to them, because otherwise I would be not observing copyright rules. But we talk about the importance of giving students access to audio files. We talk about how ELL students might be able to understand the spoken word better than the written word if they're really new to the country or to the language. And we talk about how you'll have students in your classroom who have reading disabilities, and they have no problem understanding the content. They just can't read it when it's in written textual format. So by giving them the opportunity to hear it instead of read it, allows that student to be able to perform at his or her top abilities. Also, it's nice for the students to be able to listen to something instead of reading, because there is a lot of reading in my methods class. Another thing that we talk about when the students read by listening to those two books is how easy it is for students for teachers to create audio files. Throughout the class, whenever there is a lecture, I record the lecture using my iPod and a $30 attachment called an iTalk. If you're new, just wanting to try things out, an iRiver is it's a much cheaper version of an iPod. It's an MP3 player that automatically has the audio, the recording feature built in. So that's an option that you can use. But my students are used to seeing me record during class and then just upload it. They don't see the uploading part, but they know that this just magically happens right after class and it doesn't take me long. What I tell them then is that when I recorded these other two pieces for them to listen to, the Flat Stanley and Patty Reed's Doll, All I did is I was reading it to my children at nighttime, and I had the microphone next to me. So I tell them, yeah, you're going to hear me coughing on it, and you're going to hear my kids saying, Mommy, Mommy. And they just think that that's really neat to hear a mom reading to a kid. But they also realize how easy it is for them to read literature and make it available for their students, especially those students who have special needs or an inability to read, or they just want to give them alternative modalities in which to gather the information. So they like that process a lot, learning about that. The final thing that I do with those is, because of the issue of copyright, that gives us an opportunity to talk about what's legal to record and what's not, and who can get access to those recordings and who cannot get access. Where can you put them? Can you put them online or not? The final thing that I wanted to mention, or the other two things that I wanted to mention in terms of the readings, is one, the issue of assessment. How do I know that they read? You know, I told you that I require that they write. Well, the way that I know that they actually read and they wrote is I have them write in a journal section, which is literally a blog that exists within Web Campus. Anyone can set up a blog for free, and so you could have your students create a blog, and they have to post their synopses in that blog space. What's nice for you as a teacher educator is you can then quickly go in and see who's posted on time by the right date. So I grade these two times a semester, at midterm and at final, and I make sure that they read before class, they were done before class time started on that day, the right thing, and that they did a thorough job. Usually I just skim these readings and I let them know that I'll just skim them, but if I see that a student's having a difficulty, then I will read them in detail. So it does take a long time to grade. The last thing is, what do I require them to read in addition to what I've already told you? I mentioned the podcasting, which introduces some technology components. But at the very beginning of the semester, I have them read one piece that I just love, and it's by Fitzgerald and Lester on 21st Century Social Studies Classrooms. And it gives a vision of what a classroom could look like. And they think about, they start to envision a model UN in the classroom, or what would it look like to see virtual reality tribal dancers in your classroom. And so they envision this. And then I follow that up with an assignment that I'll talk about in a moment. Some other things that they do is they use a lot of required tools in their assignments and in their independent work. For instance, on the very first day, I assigned them a concept map. They need to create their philosophy of education in terms of social studies. This is not a new thing for them, because in their previous classes, they already presented on, they've already had to write up their philosophy of education. Well, now what I'm asking them to do is think of their philosophy of education, but framing it in the social studies. Why are each of these things important within a social studies context? The other thing that they're doing differently in this assignment is, instead of writing it out as an essay statement, they're creating a concept map. So I'm having them use the technology to create it, and you're learning to use Inspiration, which is something that many of you probably have site licenses for in your local districts, and our students do in Clark County. The next is, they use a lot of pre-formatted documents. So for instance, I have my students do a textbook review, and during that textbook review, there are certain elements that I require them to look for. So I have created a form that they just download from the web. It's in Word format, so they really do need access to Microsoft Word, which they can get at the university. And that, then all they have to do is fill in each of the sections. It's probably about 3 pages to start, and when they turn it in, it's about 8 pages. So there's lots of room for them to write. I also do the same thing with the unit plans that I require that they write. I give them a shell. And for the lesson plans, I give them a pre-formatted file that they may use. But they do not have to use that. For that, if they want to choose to use a different lesson plan template, they may create their own. They're welcome to do that. whatever fits with their personal teaching style. I also have one assignment where I give them optional formatting suggestions or opportunities. So I have one is our classroom observation assignment. They need to observe two social studies lessons taught at in non-consecutive times. Some of my students have created, have presented their classroom observations in MP3 formats, just in an audio like what you're hearing now. Others have used the notebook layout feature of Word to create audio files, and that's a wonderful. I had a student with a learning disability who was able to use that very effectively, and this is an audio format that we all have access to if you have Microsoft Word. Other students create slideshows, and some do newsletters or use other page layout formatting software for that purpose. The other assignment that they have is a portfolio, and the majority of my students are going to create paper-based portfolios, though I did give them the opportunity to create e-portfolios, and I have several per semester who choose to create e-portfolios. But many of them will include CDs that have maybe their PowerPoint slideshows on them, or they'll include lots of pictures. Throughout the semester, I take lots and lots of pictures, and I show them a slideshow at the end of the semester, right before my evaluations, and then what they'll do is they'll email me while they're doing their portfolio and say, hey, Christy, can you send me some pictures of me doing, when we were on our field trip at learning about micro societies, or when we did Box City, or perhaps when we were doing the playground map, or maybe when we were doing the International Food Fest.